This is 1A. I'm Indira Lakshmanan of the Pulitzer Center, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. With Democrats now in charge of the House of Representatives, they've put the dangers of global warming back on the front burner. House Democratic leaders have revived a select committee on climate change. Meanwhile, progressives plan to introduce a Green New Deal bill as early as this week, and several Democratic 2020 hopefuls are jostling to champion a green jobs creation plan, though the details are still fuzzy. Not all Democrats are on board, though. Some believe it's a political non-starter that will never win bipartisan support. And some moderate Republicans are pushing their own plan to slap fees on carbon emissions, given that others, including the president, dismiss climate change as liberal hysteria. Representative Ro Khanna, a Democrat representing California's 17th district, sees a Green New Deal as a bipartisan crowd pleaser and a smart way to revive American jobs. He's with us here in the studio. Also joining us to talk about the politics of the possible on climate change is Ryan Costello, a former Republican congressman from Pennsylvania's 6th District. He's now managing director of Americans for Carbon Dividends. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Last but not least, Amy Harder, an energy and climate reporter for Axios, is in a studio. Amy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
We'd love to hear from you, too, listeners. Do you support a Green New Deal or a fee on carbon emissions? You can comment on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at 1A, or you can email us at 1A@WAMU.org. So, Representative Khanna, to follow up on the conversation we had before the break, you were one of the early supporters of the Green New Deal, and it is not a small concept. It seeks to be a dramatic overhaul of the economy. The title, of course, is a throwback to the FDR New Deal economic reforms during the Depression. Tell us more about what this plan aims to do and whether one of your political supporters, California Representative and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, is she on board with you?
Well, she's certainly on board with a bold vision for dealing with climate change, as she had appointed Ed Markey back in 2008 to the Select Committee on Climate Change. Here's what we need to do. After the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change came up with a report that said in 12 years, if we don't get the temperatures rising at 1.5 degrees instead of 2 degrees, we're all in a world of hurt. And they gave some very specific things we needed to do, from investing in solar and wind to planting trees and preventing deforestation to making sure that we were capturing carbon. And what the Green New Deal is a vision that says we really need to take bold steps to be able to achieve this, and we can do it while creating jobs. Very specifically, Ed Markey and I have a bill that we're going to come out with that's going to help make electric vehicles possible in the next 10 years to get it to 50% fleet and provide a refundable tax credit to manufacturing in the United States so that the GM factories can put people back to work to make electric vehicles. Those are the types of things that I think are win-wins.
And this is the same bill that, that you're saying Democratic Senator of Massachusetts Ed Markey and also New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have been talking about introducing this week?
They are introducing a broader bill, which is the framework for the Green New Deal. And what they're saying is aspirationally, here are the types of things we need to do so that we can deal with climate change and have bold policies. Then the question is, what are the specifics? And Ed Markey and I are introducing one idea as a very, very specific issue, which is here's how you get electric vehicles. And I think we're going to see a lot more policy proposals that fleshes out the broader vision of a Green New Deal.
All right. Well, briefly, Representative Khanna, you wrote this book called Entrepreneurial Nation, Why Manufacturing is Still Key to America's Future. So explain to us how you can create manufacturing jobs while at the same time cutting carbon emissions.
Well, a lot of the new manufacturing is actually good for the environment. Consider these two data points. The fastest growing industries, 12 times other industries, are solar and wind. These are creating a whole new generation of jobs in manufacturing. And when you go around the country, as I did when I wrote the book, you see that most of the modern factories aren't the traditional ideas of dirty or pollutant factories. They're actually done with often zero emission buildings. They're done with modern technology. They are very environmentally conscious. Apple's new campus in my district is actually a net producer of energy. And so those are that is the vision for modern manufacturing. I actually think you can be competitive in this country and environmentally conscious.
Amy Harder, as the representative said, Democrats, including Senator Markey and Representative Ocasio-Cortez, are planning to introduce this Green New Deal framework as early as this week. But how does it come against up against the political reality of getting passed?
Well, I think it's going to be a set of really progressive policies. The details that are out there now include a goal of 100% renewable electricity within 10 years. For context, right now we're about 17% renewable electricity. Half of that, slightly more than half of that, is actually hydroelectricity, which is not the wind and solar that most people think of today.
Is there something wrong with it, though?
No. Hydroelectricity is just as renewable as wind and solar, but it's not as politically popular today. There's environmental concerns about using water, particularly as climate change exacerbates droughts. There's been more environmental opposition to hydroelectricity. So I mentioned that number just to show that the very big challenge to get to 100% renewable electricity by 2030 or even sooner. And so I think, and I would love to hear the congressman's thoughts on this, is to what degree he thinks that the Democratic caucus itself, putting aside Republicans, if everybody in the Democratic Party could support something like this. The Green New Deal, as it stands, the general details that we know now, also include a federal jobs guarantee for everybody who wants to work on the transition to a cleaner economy. It might even include universal health care, which is far outside the energy space. So it's a very, very big idea, and it's gaining momentum among progressives. I tend to think that it's going to be very difficult to get something that only has part of the Democratic Party and no Republicans.
Well, as you say, Amy, there are many Democrats who don't support a Green New Deal. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio are not likely to support us. Representative Khanna, why not?
Well, of course, different people have different politics. I think what you'll see in the draft of Senator Markey and Representative Ocasio's resolution is that it's aspirational, it's broad-based. It's not a catch-all for all the progressive policies. I know on the website they had federal jobs guarantee and Medicare for All, and there are things that I support. But the resolution is going to be more focused, dealing specifically with what are the policies we need to get to 100% renewable energy within 12 years. Now, there's a recognition that that's going to be very, very, very difficult, but you have to start with a bold aspiration and vision to address the crisis that we face. And I believe many Democrats will be on board with the aspiration. Where you'll find differences of opinion is on the specifics, and that we'll debate and see what we can get a majority of the House and Senate on board with.
Well, we invited Representative Frank Pallone, who's a Democrat of New Jersey, and he's the chair of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, to join us. He had a scheduling conflict, but this is what he said when he was asked if he supported a Green New Deal in a recent interview with WNYC's Brian Lehrer.
We got to bring the Democrats and Republicans together if we're going to do anything. So there's an opportunity, if we can do a major infrastructure bill, to use that as a way of basically moving forward on, you know, either providing some kind of tax incentives or subsidies or something of that nature to do more with renewables, to actually, you know, crack down on these on leaky pipelines, on to rebuild the electricity grid, to actually move towards electric cars, to do things that would actually make a difference. So, you know, I guess I don't want to just lay a groundwork for something that might happen in five or 10 years and just talk about it. I want to actually get things done. And the reality is that, you know, we still have climate deniers in the White House. We have climate deniers in the Senate. The Republicans in the House are climate deniers. So we kind of have to convince them to take some action on climate, even though they may deny it. And those are the, you know, I think the infrastructure bill is something that may actually be concrete and lead to some initiatives that can pass on a bipartisan basis and be signed by the president that would move in that direction.
Ryan Costello, Representative Pallone is obviously concerned about climate change, about the existence of Republicans in Congress as well as in the White House who are climate deniers. But he also seems not to be a huge fan of the Green New Deal. He thinks other things are going to get us there. What's your response to that?
Well, I think a couple things. First, he's correct about feeling that anything less than a bipartisan solution to this is not going to be something that's durable. We do have a Republican Senate, while the Democrats do control the House. Control of the House tends to shift back and forth every couple terms. And I think that focusing on something that is more center-oriented is appropriate. Let me just mention this about the term Green New Deal. I do believe the term itself is still ill-defined. I don't mean that to be a criticism. I do like the fact that we're focusing on climate change and the need to combat it through policy mechanisms that will drive down carbon dioxide pollution.
All right. Well, I mean, I want to say that we did invite several other prominent members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats with differing views, to join this conversation. They either declined or didn't respond, but those offers to join us in future still stand. So in the meantime, Representative Khanna, you know, I need to point out that one of the disputes among Democrats is whether nuclear power, and we referred to it before, hydropower, should be included in the proposal and count towards the 100% renewable energy. What is your position and why?
Well, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says we need to do all of the above. But I think that the focus for us should be solar, wind, and policies that will really get us to a clean environment without that. But we shouldn't rule anything off the table. That said, I think that the real debate here is between those who want a bold vision and what Frank Pallone is talking about is incremental pragmatism. But there's no reason we can't do both. We can be for a bold vision, what it's really going to require to deal with this crisis. And at the same time, we can say, OK, what can we get in this Congress? I don't think one excludes the other.
I'm Indira Lakshmanan, and you're listening to 1A. Amy, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I find it to be such a fascinating observation of political firepower that the Green New Deal is getting so much attention, absent most substantive details. The other side of this debate, which is getting far less attention, is what's actually been introduced as actual bipartisan legislation, and that is to place a tax on carbon emissions. And I know former Congressman Costello, who's working on behalf of that advocacy campaign, can talk about why he supports it. But it's interesting because there's been a lot of behind-the-scenes work for years on behalf of oil companies and environmental groups and others to try to forge this industry bipartisan compromise to do a tax on carbon, which is a humongous policy. And yet it's not getting the attention because for firebrands like Representative Ocasio-Cortez from New York is championing other policies. And so, you know, it's interesting that there's these battles over the different types of policies and whether or not, as this debate moves forward during the 2020 election and after, which one comes to the surface.
Ryan Costello, Amy makes a good point. It sounds like your party, or at least those members of your party, the Republicans who fear climate change as a real man-made thing and want to do something about it, have a marketing problem. You have not been able to get as much attention for your carbon emissions fee program known as carbon dividends that the newly elected progressives have gotten for their Green New Deal. So tell us about the carbon dividends program. How would it work? And how much support do you have even within your own party?
Well, last question first. We are in a position where we expect the actual language text of a bill to be introduced over the summer, at which point in time we'll have a much better metric on members within the Republican Party who are supportive of the plan. The plan itself starts with carbon pricing at $40 per metric ton. It is not, as I see it, a tax if the government doesn't keep the money here. Our focus really is away from even more in the way of regulations because, frankly, the cost of federal regulations amounts to a hidden tax on individuals and families. Coupled with the carbon pricing is that all money, approximately $200 billion per year, is returned to the American taxpayer. In connection with it, another interdependent prong is that we've seen some of these liability suits that are happening across the country. There would be indemnification there, and we would have regulatory simplification. So right now we're working on the regulatory framework, which is in place or which may soon become in place, including the Clean Power Plan. Some of those regulations would not take effect. There would be preemption at the federal level. That's something else we're working on, because in California, and I believe perhaps even in Oregon soon enough, you will have state carbon pricing programs. We seek to have a federal pricing program that would preempt it at the federal level. And I would just add, for Republicans moving forward, look, independent studies show crop yields could drop as much as 35% if greenhouse gas emissions continue on the current trajectory. And we know about 33 million people are at risk of flooding each and every day. We know that there are adverse health impacts due to carbon dioxide pollutions. And I think every single day, every single month, particularly as we see some of these extreme weather events continue to happen, that it is becoming more commonly held amongst the American public that climate change is very serious, and that we need to have, to use Representative Khanna's language, a very bold solution to it. We feel that the carbon dividends plan is that solution, and that we can rally both Republicans and Democrats around it in the months and years to come.
All right, Ryan. Well, let's listen to this call that we got from a listener who supports a fee on carbon emissions.
My name is Roland. I'm from Fargo, North Dakota. I support a carbon fee with 100% return equally across the board to the citizens of each country based on that country's carbon emissions. In the United States, 70% of the people would get more money back than they pay in the fee. I'm leery of the Green New Deal, especially if they had tried to include, for example, Medicare for All. The Affordable Care Act, as it was being debated, took the air out of the room for a year and a half, and we can't afford to do that with regards to global climate change. It has to be the central issue. It's the existential issue of our time, and we need to concentrate on it.
Existential issue of our time. We have just 30 seconds before our break, Ryan Costello, but what are your quick reactions to Roland's comments?
I thought that they were articulate. I agree with him. And I do think, particularly on the dividends piece of this, that returning every dollar back to the American taxpayer is extremely critical. Most Americans think that if Washington, D.C. takes dollars, they're going to go spend them, and there's not going to be any accountability or transparency to it. That's a central tenet of the carbon dividends plan. The other thing I would add is that we have a carbon border adjustment component to this as well, which will, I believe, add to American competitiveness.
Okay, hold that thought. We've got more to come from you and our guests in a moment. This is 1A. Stay with us. We're talking about the politics of climate change policy on Capitol Hill with Representative Ro Khanna, a Democratic congressman from California, Ryan Costello, a former Republican congressman from Pennsylvania, who's now managing director of Americans for Carbon Dividends, and Amy Harder, a reporter on energy and climate for Axios. We did invite Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who may be the most prominent proponent of a Green New Deal, but her office didn't respond. In November, she joined environmental protests who staged a sit-in outside then-Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi's office on Capitol Hill.
I just want to let you all know how proud I am of each and every single one of you for putting yourselves and your bodies and everything on the line to make sure that we save our planet, our generation, and our future. It's so incredibly important.
Shortly after that sit-in, Representative Nancy Pelosi promised to revive the House Select Committee on Climate Crisis. And joining us now from WUSF in Tampa, Florida, is chair of that Select Committee, Representative Kathy Castor. She's a Democrat from Florida's 14th District, known for her strong support of environmental regulations. Representative Castor, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on to discuss the climate crisis.
Well, first, let me ask you, we've been talking about the Green New Deal. We've been talking about carbon dividends. First of all, you're a Democrat. Do you support the Green New Deal? And will your newly revived committee take up the issue?
You bet we're going to tackle the climate crisis head on. And much of what's being discussed in the Green New Deal will have to be addressed and pressed forward, including the transition to renewable energy and investments in communities on the front lines. The Select Committee now is tasked with creating that detailed policy framework, taking general ideas and turning them into legislation and new law. We've got to create a clean energy economy that creates good-paying jobs in time to avert the worst impacts of the changing climate. So we're going to press for urgent action, a dramatic reduction of greenhouse gases in defense of America.
Well, let me ask you, Representative Kester, this is a select committee, which for listeners who don't know means it will not have the authority to approve legislation or the power to subpoena anybody. So what can you really do?
Well, we will, in essence, be the quarterback or the maestro for the Congress as the standing committees, a number of them, move forward on climate action. You know, we have Democrats have really been stymied since 2010 when Republicans took the Congress. The good news is this week we're going to have our first hearings on the climate crisis than we've had in a few years now. So it's time to get to work to make clean energy a pillar of our economy and unleash American ingenuity with an eye to ensuring that we do not leave anyone behind.
Well, Amy Harder, I want to ask you, because we all saw this recent UN report that warned that we as humans, not just Americans, have only 11 years until 2030 to start radically reducing our carbon emissions to be on track to halt rising temperatures that would bring catastrophic flooding, drought, extreme weather, food shortages, basically a pretty apocalyptic vision by the end of this century for all of our young children. And yet, even within the Democratic Party, which is much more strong on the issue of climate change, there is friction over what is the right way to achieve these goals. So how do you see this playing out politically?
Right. Well, the 11 years framing that we only have until 2030 to address this problem is actually a framing that most scientists reject, because it frames climate change as a black and white issue, that if we reach 2030 and we haven't done anything, well, okay, then we're let's give up and just let the planet bake. But that's not how climate change works. And so I think that framing perhaps provides a level of energy and worry among a lot of young people and progressives, but it actually, I think, makes it more difficult to get anything done. I think it's safe to say that there won't be any serious legislating on climate change until after the 2020 elections. Washington does politics better than anything else lately, unfortunately. So I think what the Green New Deal is, more than an actual policy, is a rallying cry for progressives in the primary, in the Democratic primary, and only after the 2020 election, depending on how it goes. If Trump wins re-election, I don't anticipate there to be big climate action. If a Democrat wins, then we might end up in the same place we were a decade ago when Obama was in office. He pushed through a climate bill through the House, then it failed in the Senate because, again, they could not get enough Democrats to support their own climate change bill. So I think it's important to provide some flashbacks to how things happened when Democrats did control all of Washington. They couldn't get it through.
I want to read a text from one of our listeners who says, I want 100% renewable energy in 10 years. So this person doesn't even want to wait till 2030. A green energy plan with the same urgency and commitment as JFK's goal of going to the moon, not because it's easy or hard, but because it is important and necessary. In this case, it's extremely necessary to mitigate catastrophic disruption in food, water, etc., for millions, including my descendants. So Representative Khanna, I want to ask you, you know, this person certainly gets it, but a December poll by Yale and George Mason universities found that 82% of Americans have never even heard the words Green New Deal. So how do you rally votes in Congress for a plan that most of the public hasn't even heard of?
Well, it's a new idea, and it's going to take time, just like Medicare for All took time. But I think Kathy Kester is going to do a great job in the committee, and she's going to bring great leadership. It's not that unrealistic. I mean, look, Iowa, I was talking to Jody Ernst, a Republican from Iowa, Republican senator, and she said Iowa by 2022 is going to have 80% renewable energy. And of course, a lot of people are going to be paying attention to Iowa in the next year. So there are states that are making tremendous progress. And what we need to do is figure out the best way of facilitating and expediting that. I agree with Amy that the fight is not over after 11 years. I think the point is, though, that these 11 years really are going to be key in seeing how much of a hole we're going to be in. If we act now proactively, we can avert a lot of the disastrous consequences. Final thing, I think Ryan is one of the more thoughtful people in Congress, and I know he's trying to get Republicans on board. And my only plea would be on this tax and the fee and give the money back to individuals. I'm open to looking at that, but the current bills couple that with deregulation of the EPA. So if it's a clean bill that would be a fee and give it back to the individuals but strengthens the EPA, I think you'd have a much better chance of getting Democrats than inserting language that's going to weaken the EPA.
Well, that's a really good point, Ryan Costello. The minute that you add in, loosening, further deregulating the EPA, which has been a real issue for Democrats in the first 2 years of Donald Trump's term, you're not going to get bipartisan sign on to that. So let me ask you, Ryan Costello, there are so many power brokers in your party, the president included, who do not believe in man-made climate change and don't feel any urgency to address it. As you know, the U.S. is the largest per capita emitter of greenhouse gases, yet President Trump pulled us out of the Paris Climate Accord. So you want your plan, and you think that Republicans will sign on to it. How do you get, how do you light a fire under them to even support your carbon plan? And would your plan work quickly enough to avert the catastrophe that we could be seeing in a matter of decades?
Well, Congressman Khanna is right about if in 11 years we don't do anything, we'll be in an even deeper hole. And so the first metric is to make sure that we do get passage in the very near future of something that is bold so that we can start dialing back the amount of carbon emissions that we produce. The carbon fee and dividend is fixing the broken price signal on the market right now. Greenhouse gas emissions. It's not intended to be or become a long-term revenue stream for the federal government. Likewise, though, what it seeks to do is incentivize our collective decisions toward the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. I would make the argument that regulation is not going to do that. The carbon pricing mechanism is what will do it. We have modeling after modeling. We just came out with an economist statement last week. We will drive down carbon emissions much more ambitiously than the Paris Accord, which I support, but as you noted, the president does not, much more so than regulations would do. And regulations are twice as costly as this plan, and they do not work as effectively. So I may respectfully disagree with Roe on this point, but what we can agree on is the need to get something done rather quickly. I'm also mindful, though, that I do not anticipate any major climate legislation getting signed into law until after the next presidential election. I do take issue with what the president says on the issue of climate as well.
Representative Khanna has essentially said that he or other Democrats might support a carbon dividend plan if it were a clean bill without that deregulation of the EPA. Amy Harder, a number of big fossil fuel companies are backing the carbon dividends plan. Why? Is it because they want it to be mixed with deregulation of the EPA? Or what's their incentive for supporting this?
There's a few reasons why big oil companies, namely ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips, are getting behind this proposal. One is that they're facing a lot of pressure from their investors. They're facing pressure from big asset managers like BlackRock to be more upfront about this. Another big reason is lawsuits. Exxon and Conoco are both named in several lawsuits around the country, blaming them and asking for billions of dollars of damage when it comes to climate change. Now, those lawsuits have been largely unsuccessful, but it's still part of this big environmental campaign to raise opposition to these oil companies. This proposal would, in some ways, limit some of these lawsuits. And lastly, they stand to benefit with a carbon tax with more natural gas, which is cleaner than coal and would actually benefit for a certain amount of time under a tax.
I'm Indira Lakshmanan, and you're listening to 1A. Representative Castor, I want to ask you whether you think the dividend plan that Ryan Costello is supporting would attract more moderate Democrats than the Green New Deal.
No, it's too soon to tell. The good news is that here in America, we have the tools to tackle this crisis. We need to examine that whole range of tools that we have. What is different now, I think, is that people understand the risks. It's all too real. For example, here in the Tampa Bay area, it was only a year and a half ago when an enormous Category 5 Hurricane Irma was approaching Florida. I rushed to evacuate just like my neighbors. We boarded up our house. We packed family photo albums and pictures into a car and drove them to the top of a parking garage. People are ready for very bold action, and this has got to be a bipartisan effort. I see a lot of change. For example, in the state of Texas, where a lot of my colleagues would never want to discuss any kind of renewable energy now, wind power is taking a substantial percentage of the way they generate electricity. Local communities, businesses have taken the lead here. It's time for the Congress to meet them and
All
meet
right.
this challenge.
Well, we got a call from a listener who didn't express support for either the Green Deal or the carbon dividend plan. He thinks we need to go even deeper and attack the root of the problem, which is our consumption that drives carbon emissions.
Hi, I'm Peter from Broomfield, Colorado. The climate change issue is very important because the atmosphere is indeed warming up. I witness it in the quality of the spring storms that come in the normal January winter storms. The storms are warmer and wetter in January than they used to be. I also want to say that that's a consumption problem. It's the way people eat with the cheese and the meat and the high resource diets, the way they live in their single family dwelling units, and the way they drive their cars. I do not want to see any kind of taxes or green revolution until we address the consumption issue very aggressively. After that, I think we won't really even need to do that because it will change the situation so much.
Representative Khanna, what is your response to Peter? Is that realistic that we all become vegans and stop driving?
Well, I think we can all do a little bit more in our lives to be aware of the issue. I mean, someone pointed out I left the water faucet on while brushing my teeth and I stopped doing that. I mean, obviously we can all take actions, but I think we need actual policy. I mean, we can't just appeal to individuals to dramatically change their way of life. And I don't think it requires that. I think we can get to a large investment in renewable energy and we can put people back to work. And this is the one place where I think there may be bipartisan a possibility. I mean, imagine if you could put those GM workers in places like Ohio and Michigan back to work making electric SUV vehicles. There's no reason that that has to be partisan. So we need to link smart environmental policy with America's economic growth.
Mary on Facebook writes to us, I live in Oklahoma and we need the Green New Deal. Oil companies have run the school of thought for long enough. If they're so threatened by the green industry, they should consider investing in alternative energy to stay in the game. Mallory has tweeted us, I support both the Green New Deal and a carbon dividend fee plan. But until you make electric cars more affordable for regular people, you should only tax giant corporations who produce more carbon than citizens. Don't make the same mistake as France. All right, that's just a sampling of what our listeners think. Amy, I want you as the reporter here to look ahead to the 2020 election. Some candidates, including Senators Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, have said they support a Green New Deal. It feels like it's become a progressive litmus test of sorts. At the same time, other political figures who care about climate, like former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, have been cautious about supporting it. Why?
Bloomberg represents the more moderate side of the Democratic Party. And I think going into the primaries of this next presidential election, you're going to see a lot of these internal divisions within the Democratic Party come to the surface. For years, we've seen the Republican Party divide over a host of issues. And now we're seeing that happen on the Democratic side with climate change. I do think from a very big picture perspective, this program, we're here to talk about climate change, but voters still, by and large, prioritize other issues. So I anticipate climate change to be a pillar of the progressive policy agenda. I don't think it'll be anything that the top candidates lead on.
One word answer, which one has more chance of getting through the House and Senate and winning approval from the president? Carbon dividends or Green New Deal?
I think after the 2020, probably carbon dividends.
All right.
But I think there's very little chance of either.
Well, you heard it here first. That's what Amy Harder, energy and climate reporter for Axios, thinks. Thank you so much, Amy, for joining us. Also with us, Representative Kathy Castor, a Democrat from Florida and chair of the House Select Committee on Climate Crisis. Ro Khanna, a Democratic representative from California's 17th District, and Ryan Costello, former Republican from Pennsylvania, now managing director of Americans for Climate Dividends. This show is produced by Danielle Knight, and we come to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Till next time, I'm Indira Lakshmanan, executive editor at the Pulitzer Center. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.